Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Fans of Willy Wonka, Jim the Waco Kid, and Young Frankenstein continue to mourn the death of actor Gene Wilder. He died Sunday from complications of Alzheimer's disease at the age of 83. Now, Alzheimer's is the sixth leading cause of death among U.S. adults, and 5 million Americans are affected by the disease. But today, there's encouraging news from Cambridge-based Biogen. The biotech company published the results from a clinical trial of a drug that could slow down the disease's progress. Well, joining us now with more on this is Dr. Dennis Selko, co-director of the Ann Romney Center for Neurologic Disease at Brigham and Women's Hospital. Dr. Selko, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Delighted to be with you.
It's great to have you. Well, first of all, just for full disclosure and clarity's sake, are you directly associated with this study that Biogen has published?
No, I am not, and I don't have any special relationship with Biogen.
Okay, good. We wanted to get that formality out of the way here. So explain to us, the drug that Biogen tested is aducanumab, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. What specifically is it said to have accomplished in this clinical trial?
Well, it accomplished something quite remarkable. It was able, in just a 12-month period, to lower the level of the notorious amyloid plaques in the brains of patients with typical Alzheimer's disease. And that lowering of the plaque burden correlated exactly with the dose of the antibody that was given. And what's most important is that that was associated with a lessening of cognitive decline. So it was not that the antibody cured the disease at this juncture or completely took away the symptoms, but it seemed to arrest it, particularly at the highest dose they used.
Oh, wow. So it was very strongly correlated, as you say, with the amount that was given to the patients?
Exactly. So the dose really mattered. So the amount that was given to the patient, and this is given intravenously through an infusion that is painless and easy to do in a doctor's office or hospital setting. That infusion occurs once a month, and they tried placebo, and they tried four other doses of the antibody. And the more antibody they administered each month, the lower the amyloid plaque burden in the patient's brain went. And at the highest dose, they got to a much lower plaque burden, just a little bit above what one needed to qualify for the trial in the first place.
Right. Well, Dr. Selko, remind us briefly, these amyloid plaques, remind us how they're thought to be the primary cause or affect memory loss in Alzheimer's patients.
Well, there's a great deal of genetic and neuropathologic evidence that, number one, everybody with Alzheimer's has these plaques. It's a defining feature of the disease. Number two, they begin perhaps 20 or more years before someone forgets where they parked their car or the name of their eighth grandchild or something important like that. Long before that, these amyloid plaques are building up. Well, how would we know that? Because there are terrific ways to image the amyloid plaques in patients harmlessly by doing a special kind of PET scan. And that was done in all of the 165 individuals in this study from Biogen. So one knew for sure that they had mild symptoms of Alzheimer's and they had plaque buildup. And the antibody was given all the time. And the best evidence that the plaque buildup matters to the cognitive impairment is that genetically people who have accelerated plaque buildup for a variety of reasons are much more likely to get clinical Alzheimer's and have more memory trouble.
Right. Well, to be clear, though, nobody who participated in this trial, no one's saying that anyone was cured of their Alzheimer's or that even there was a substantial reversal in impairment.
That's exactly right, and that's very important for your listeners to understand that this was something that at the highest dose that was tested in this admittedly small study, there was an apparent arrest or plateau of decline. And that's great news because we simply don't see that otherwise. This disease doesn't have a mechanism for arresting it, but it isn't a cure and it isn't a reversal of the disease.
Well, nevertheless, if the results of this study are replicated and confirmed, I am seeing, people in the Alzheimer's research community saying that this could be a game changer. Do you agree with that?
I very much do. The data are really beautiful. As a scientist and physician, if I look at the data in detail, they're very compelling, very convincing. And so this is what we've been waiting for. Now, it is true that it's still an experimental drug or an experimental antibody, and it is currently in phase 3, and people can actually seek to enroll in the phase 3 studies that Biogen is conducting around the world in many, many centers. So until that phase 3 final testing is done, we can't be super enthusiastic, but all of the data in this new paper are consistent with the idea that the amyloid buildup is what's triggering the progressive memory failure. And if you could arrest the amyloid buildup, that would be good news for your memory.
Mm-hmm. But to sort of exercise a healthy dose of caution here, there have been potential therapies in the past or drug treatments in the past that seemed very promising in the early clinical trials, but then later went on to fail their clinical trials, and even, if I remember the literature correctly, caused the death of some patients who were participating in those trials. Is that not true?
So the last point is not the case. They didn't actually cause the death of people.
Okay.
There was no evidence of that. But there were very early attempts at lowering amyloid that led to allergic reactions in some patients, and trials had to be terminated. Other trials didn't even have that. They went all the way through to 18 months of trying the drug, but the results were very weak. This study is different, I think, because the data are so clear that in just 6 months, amyloid lowering had already begun, and by 12 months, there was considerably more amyloid lowering in the brain, and that was associated with a benefit on a classical cognitive test that we use in people with Alzheimer's. No other trial heretofore achieved that level of rigor, that level of scientific proof. So you're right, we've had failures, but generally they have not looked near as good as these data do. Having said that, we still need the results of the phase 3 trial to be certain that when extended to much larger number of patients, these data hold up.
Hmm. Well, Dr. Selko, while we have you, I'd love to sort of get your bigger picture view on where we are in terms of research and development for any sort of therapy for Alzheimer's. I mean, it seems as if this focus on the amyloid plaques is bearing fruit. Is that where you'd like to see the research continue?
I think we need a lot of research on a number of different abnormalities in the Alzheimer brain, and these plaques are one of the main abnormalities. We also have tangles in the brain, and we've known about those for more than 100 years since Alzheimer described the disease. We need approaches to lower the tangles. There's a mild type of inflammation going on in the Alzheimer patient's brain, and we need to tune down that inflammatory process, and there are experimental drugs now that seem to be able to do that, although they're nowhere near as advanced as the article we're talking about today. So we need multiple shots on goal, not just amyloid-oriented, but the amyloid has been so strongly validated by Alzheimer genetics and by mouse models, etc., that this article is going the right direction, and we need more competing antibodies like this to lower amyloid levels. And not just antibodies, but even pills. There are trials underway that are in phase 3 of an oral pill, mm-hmm. more than one, that could also lower amyloid levels in the brain.
Yeah. You know, at the start of our conversation, I noted the fact that Alzheimer's disease is the sixth leading cause of death in the U.S. amongst adults. But then we noted that the rate of Alzheimer's, there were a couple of studies from 2014 and this year that seem to say that the rate of Alzheimer's disease and other dementias may be falling in the U.S. and other developed countries. Is that true?
There is some evidence for that. It's still somewhat debatable. But the reason that might be happening is because people are now much more cognizant of doing the best they can for their brain health. So going on the so-called Mediterranean diet, getting proper exercise, taking care of any other medical problem that could affect your brain, obviously avoiding strokes, avoiding head trauma, wearing helmets when you bicycle ride, all of those kinds of things seem to be leading to a relatively subtle downturn of the growth of the Alzheimer's problem. But don't tell that to someone who's just been diagnosed with Alzheimer's and who is really having trouble forgetting important things in her life, like the names of her grandchildren. So we see a huge amount of Alzheimer's, and we're not about to not see it. It's good, though, that good brain health might be taking the edge off the rate of rise in Alzheimer's.
Yeah. I appreciate that you said her there because almost, what is it, two-thirds of the more than 5 million Americans who have Alzheimer's are women. Do we have a better understanding as to why that is?
It's not quite as high as that. It may be more like 55-45 or 60-40, not quite two-thirds, but it's overrepresented in women, even taking into account their greater longevity in our society. And we are working hard to figure out what is it. Is it a hormonal influence? Is it something about brain chemistry that's slightly different? And the answer is not in. But we do know that women have more than their fair share of a burden from Alzheimer's, and we're cognizant of that. And, of course, in this trial, gender made no difference. People were helped whether they were male or female in the trial.
Yeah. Dr. Selko, I'm curious. I mean, there's been a lot of attention, for example, on Vice President Joe Biden's call for a cancer moonshot, right, to find a cure for cancer. When it comes to Alzheimer's, for example, Hillary Clinton's presidential health platform includes a proposal to spend $2 billion annually on Alzheimer's research at the NIH. What are your thoughts on what's needed or what could further the development of new treatments for Alzheimer's?
Well, I'd answer that question from the perspective of my patients, and that is they are so sad and so upset when they learn that they have a diagnosis of Alzheimer's and they know what lies ahead that our society does need to pull out the stops. This is a very common disease. The number of people is increasing who get it because the disease lasts long and people do survive for years with the disease. I would say that a moonshot or a much more robust public response to trying to solve Alzheimer's is necessary, and all of this good work, well, this study happens to be done by a company. It's all based on academic research initially that was done with the taxpayer dollars, NIH-funded research. So I applaud the idea of a dramatic increase in spending for Alzheimer's. Some of that has happened now in the Obama administration, and we need to look to the next president getting behind a real increase in research spending, because frankly, without basic research that's expensive and takes a long time, you won't find the drug that actually cures your Alzheimer's.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Selko, you've been one of the leading researchers on Alzheimer's since the 1980s, right? What keeps you going?
Well, I feel tremendous passion about not telling another patient, another family, gee, you seem to have Alzheimer's and there isn't any definitive treatment out there. We can help you a bit. We can make you feel better. We can plan for your future. We can give you some symptomatic medicines that might take the edge off of your confusion for a little while. But I don't want to tell people anymore that there is little or nothing we can really do definitively. And I want to be able to write a prescription for my patients that comes from a drug or an antibody, in this case, that my research and other people's research had something to do with. And I'm getting that feeling now. This study makes me quite excited. And in terms of why I continue to be passionate about this, if you sit with families who suffer from Alzheimer's, and you mentioned Gene Wilder as an example earlier, and he's a remarkable actor that entertained all of us lifelong. You don't want to see people suffer this just at the time when they've completed many of life's tasks and they're looking forward to some time off and some positivity, and then they're faced with this terrible diagnosis. That is more than enough stimulus to keep me going.
Well, Dr. Dennis Selko, he's the co-director of the Ann Romney Center for Neurologic Disease at Brigham and Women's Hospital. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Time now for the Remembrance Project, our weekly look at ordinary people who lived extraordinary lives. Today, writer Alyssa Eli remembers how a North Andover man tried to always be there for his family.
The best way to get Joe Rajewski Jr.'s help, whether it was on a house repair or a 66 Mustang restoration, was to start the project yourself and then, in Joe's presence, realize your hopeless inadequacy. He could make or fix anything. He lived on a higher plane of technical competence, some kind of mechanical Olympus. But he descended whenever the people he loved needed him. It wasn't just plumbing or electrical work. Less practical wishes got the same kind of scrutiny. When his daughter, Genevieve Rajewski, wanted a Ghostbusters costume, he created one with a working proton pack. When she decided she loved miniature mechanical horse competitions, he created a one-man toy horse body shop.
And then he just sort of set up this shop. He would use a blowtorch. So he would saw off their legs, and then he would like melt the plastic with a blowtorch from his either his plumbing tools or his mechanical tools and put them back together. He just would do it.
When Genevieve's brother took up bonsai cultivation, he and Joe trained saplings into painstaking scenes. Almost as an afterthought, Joe also created a bonsai garden in the backyard. Then the kids went through a karate phase. Joe took on the entire dojo, ripped up the school's carpet, painted the walls with inspirational messages, and incidentally, learned to perfect a full split. A million helpful projects were always underway. And yet, when his wife worked in a home for troubled teens, there was time for him to surprise everyone with ice cream and Sunday fixings. And when Genevieve had a newborn on her sleepless hands, he drove 40 minutes with a cup of coffee. These were declarations of love, practical and unsentimental.
Even when you'd have him over for dinner, he'd be bussing your table and putting everything in the dishwasher and unloading your dishwasher. Like, yeah, I think he had a small problem with staying still.
Joe had a hard time asking for help when he was ill, first with colon cancer and then with bladder cancer. In a world where it's all about me, it was never about him.
He just was worried. Like, he felt like he had so much stuff left to do, and he was frustrated by that, and, you know, that he really didn't care about himself. It was just more like, I'm the guy that takes care of things. Who is going to take care of stuff when I'm not here?
No one took care of stuff like Joe did. But in his absence and in his honor, everyone is trying.
Writer Alyssa Eli remembering Joe Rajewski, who died in March at the age of 68. To suggest a loved one for remembrance, email remember@wbur.org.